Our next topic here is defensive issues, and we've got three cases under this topic.
In a murder trial following a melee at Cowboy Stadium, appellant admitted he pointed his gun at the victim and acknowledged that his finger must have been on the trigger since the gun went off, but he claimed that it went off accidentally when he was jostled. He denied intentionally pulling the trigger or intending to kill the victim, but he also claimed he was acting in defense of his brother and himself when he pointed the gun at the victim, and he requested jury charges on self-defense, defense of a third party, and necessity. The trial court refused the instructions and the Court of Appeals affirmed on appeal. The trial court said appellant had to admit to committing the offense, and he didn't. He said it was accidental and unintentional. And the case therefore involves the so-called confession and avoidance doctrine, the issue being whether, because the appellant failed to admit to the culpable mental state necessary to commit the offense, the confession and avoidance doctrine deprives him of these defensive instructions. It's not always been entirely clear from case law whether confession and avoidance requires a defendant to admit to harboring the culpable mental state. Can he deny that, the culpable mental state, and as long as he admits to the other elements of the crime, still obtain the defensive instructions? Maciel presents an interesting twist on confession and avoidance law. In a prosecution for DWI, the appellant sought an instruction for the defense of necessity, but her request was denied. She had been out drinking with her brother and sister-in-law. When her brother became ill while driving them home, she got behind the wheel and attempted to move the car out of the middle of the road. That's where the police found her with the engine running, and they arrested her. At trial, she testified that because she had been unable to get the car to move, she said, quote, "I wasn't driving. I don't think I was operating it." The Court of Appeals held that under confession and avoidance, she had to admit to the culpable conduct of driving or operating the vehicle, and because she didn't, she was not entitled to the necessity instruction. On discretionary review, appellant argues that she was just mistaken as a matter of law to think she was not actually operating the car in contemplation of DWI law. She admitted to engaging in the conduct that would constitute the offense, and she thought she should have received the instruction.
Okay. Hernandez involves a situation where there's a defensive strategy to admitting to other criminal conduct that was not actually charged by the state and then asking for a lesser based on that conduct. So here, Hernandez was charged with sexually assaulting a child by penetrating her mouth with his penis. He denied the mouth penetration. However, he did say that he touched her vagina with his hand and that his penis touched the child's torso. The trial court denied his request for a lesser for indecency by touching. The 10th Court of Appeals reversed and said it was a valid alternative. The state on PDR says that is not the case. These are just different offenses because the conduct that he admitted to did not involve any of the same body parts here. Next topic here is jury charge error. And we're going to begin a slew of categories that are essentially a party of one. So the first case here is Doe. And that's the 0.515 element for a Class A misdemeanor enhancement was not mentioned at the guilt phase, even though it had been alleged in the charge. The state urged it a punishment, and Doe objected because it was not presented at the guilt phase. It was overruled, and the judge found the enhancement true. The Court of Appeals held that it was a guilt phase element, and it also found the error harmful under a constitutional harm standard. The state says now on PDR that it's a guilt phase issue, but Doe should have objected at the guilt phase to its omission. So egregious harm should apply as well. The Court of Appeals harm analysis, it claims, was circular because it viewed the error itself harmful and the blood alcohol content was not contested in the case. During oral argument, some of the judges focused on whether Doe could have viewed it as the state abandoning the issue at the guilt phase since it wasn't mentioned by them, and whether he had to actually properly object to that. Our next topic here is search and seizure.
In Igboji, the appellant was at the scene of a police investigation of a robbery of a Kentucky Fried Chicken. He was recording the police activity on his cell phone. 3 days later, during a non-custodial interview, the police seized his cell phone without a warrant. Later, the police did obtain a warrant to search the phone, and text messages tying appellant to the crime were admitted over his motion to suppress. The police knew that appellant had posted a Snapchat of the video he had made of the police investigation at the scene, and they were afraid that the Snapchat video might be automatically deleted from the phone after a certain period of time, and they claimed that was an exigent circumstance. The Court of Appeals found there were no exigent circumstances to excuse the warrantless seizure of the phone. First, they pointed out that the police waited 3 days to seize the phone, so there was no dissipation theory that could apply. And second, they said there was nothing to suggest that appellant was taking any affirmative steps to delete anything from the phone. So the issue in the case boils down to whether the failure of the police to seize the phone at the absolute earliest opportunity, essentially 3 days earlier than they did, whether that negated any exigency when the appellant didn't even become a suspect until shortly before they seized the phone.